Hello, everyone. Thank you, Yvonne, for a wonderful introduction. Also, thank you to Humanities Cafe for having this series. This was a wonderful opportunity for me to get out from my work, which is this book that I'm writing right now. And I will be presenting some sort of an outline of that book. This is a work that I have been doing in India from 2006 through 2012, is based on my ethnographic research among reality show dancers and Bollywood dancers. So why did I want to do this research? I am trained as a classical Indian dancer. The style that I do is Kathak, and my work, most of my research has been on classical Indian dance forms and various other things concerning classicism and gender and nation. This particular research, I really wanted to get out of my comfort zone and challenge myself to see what was happening in India right now. There's a lot of turbulence, cultural turbulence and dynamism in India, and this understanding of this age-old tradition, ancient Orientalist sort of perspective on India is a big problem, really. There's a lot happening, and a lot happening in the cultural and the political sphere. So I thought that why not look at something that's exploding on television, which is dance reality television shows. And lots of dancers there, lots of musicians there, so that's how my research started. So I thought that what I'll do is give you a pictorial outline first of my research. Let's go through some pictures and see if we can trace some of the events, some of the things that are happening. And then I'm going to talk about the three most important conceptual framework of my book, which is the theory part, which I'm not going to go deeply into today. So let's... Can you hear me if I... So I should stand here, right? Okay. Let's start with where do we see Indian dance, you know, in terms of its representation, from the past. So one of the places we see is here, right? If you go to India, you have to go to the beautiful temples. This is Ajanta Ellora and caves that really goes back to 6th century AD. And I went to visit there. It's in western part of India, Aurangabad. If you've never been there, it's one of the most outstanding experiences that you'll ever have. So I visited a few years back, and I was so inspired that I started dancing among the sculptures. This is from eastern India, again, dancing figures from temple sculptures. This is where you first, I mean, not first, but this is something is ubiquitous in India. You have to come across these beautiful dancing sculptures. And interesting thing about Indian temples is that there is a congruence of architecture and sculpture. They appear together. So this is Odissi dance, which is a classical Indian dance from Orissa. And this particular temple goes back to 13th century AD. Now there are lots of other classical Indian dance styles. I'm not going to go in depth into all the other styles, but this is another place where you do see dancing. And this is the miniature painting genre from Kotli, India. And these paintings, which are absolutely full of these dancing figures, really you find in the Muslim and the Hindu courts of India. And the style that I perform, Kathak dance, comes from this particular milieu. So there are about 5 to 7 different classical Indian dance styles, and each one is belongs to a particular region. And why they're important in modern India, I mean, why do we even care about these classical dances is because it's connected to cultural nationalism. When India was, you know, getting independence from the British, music, dance, painting, sculptures became very important for claiming a particular kind of national identity, a civilizational lineage. And interestingly, it's not just the dances from temples and the miniature paintings and that became important, but also there are lots of treatises, really ancient. One of the most important treatises is Natyashastra, which go, and this is a dance treatise actually, which goes back to 2nd century BC to 2nd century AD, very old. And then throughout, you will see, you know, one of the most important works is by Abhinavagupta in 10th century AD. So that was also a treatise on dance and music. And in all of these treatises, you see that the importance of music and dance and creativity. So in Indian philosophy, you find that religion, creativity, music, dance, literature, poetry, it's inseparable. It's really, they all come together. So it's a very interesting approach to dance, to music, to religion, to philosophy. And so that's why I thought that I really needed to look at the theory of emotion, which is a part of this philosophy. Even if I'm looking at modern dance forms or postmodern dance forms, you know, for lack of a better terminology, to look at dance television reality show. And because we have such a strong sensory history, that what does it tell us about these transformations that are going on in modern India? So the other aspect of this is Bollywood films, and because all these classical dance forms really sort of went into films, and there's a lot of history on this. There are a lot of social reform movements that were that are connected to these forms, and these dancers were you know, stigmatized as prostitutes. There's a lot of that. I'm not going to go into all that, but what you have to sort of remember is the revival of dance in modern India, which claimed a certain kind of classicism and certain kind of pure civilizational lineage. So then we come to the contemporary period. Sorry, we are not yet in the contemporary period. So I thought that we'll give you some sort of styles and the importance of these styles. Again, this is Bharatanatyam. I'm calling them neoclassical because they are all reconstructed and revived, but these are classical Indian dance forms. And this is 20th century, like I say, because they were revived around that time. And this is a representation of the yogic body. So the idea, you know, we all know what yoga is and people practice yoga all the time. But Indian dance is connected to this particular understanding of the body and mind yoking together. And it produces a certain kind of body, a certain kind of transcendence and spirituality, which you actually enter through your practice of dance. This is the basic philosophy of, you know, doing classical dance forms. This is again Bharatanatyam, another, you know, the same form. This is from southern India. Both of them are from southern India, Tamil Nadu. And this is called Abhinaya, which is a very important aspect of classical dance forms. And this uses, like, you know, Indian dance uses a lot of facial expressions. So the emotive aspects, it's not only in the body, you know, when you are expressing something, but it's also, you know, expressed through your face and your expressions and through gestures, which we call mudras. So every sort of motive can be expressed through a mudra. And it's very codified. It's a highly codified sort of genre, extremely classified, and there are lots of taxonomies attached to them. So contemporary period, right? So Bollywood, this is where this interesting sort of change, when if you want to talk about change in contemporary India in the cultural sphere, we have to understand a little bit about the role of Bollywood and the Bollywood industry. And this is when, you know, in the 1990s, there was this liberalization of the economy that happened in India. It's a very important structural change that happened to the economy. Before that, it was sort of a Nehruvian command economy, socialist kind of an economy. And in the 1990s, the markets were open. And with that, lots of important things happened. One of the things that happened was media. you know, media, globalization. These are, you know, I'm an anthropologist, so we look at these dramatic changes in, you know, some parts of the world as media and globalization. And in India, this was basically attached to the liberalization of the economy. And so what happened was, you know, in the past, television, we had just one state television, Doordarshan, and every image that was represented there was controlled by the state. So we had these classical Indian programs that were beamed from television every night, and we grew up in that milieu. Like classical Indian dance was important. We all learned because it gave us a certain kind of ideal Indian identity, ideal female identity. All of a sudden, that there was a big shift from one channel, Doordarshan channel, it became hundreds and then thousands of cable channels, satellite television, and all kinds of images started trickling in. And of course, one of the most popular shows was Dallas, I think, at one point. So, you know, being exposed to different kinds of lifestyles, different kinds of dancing. So what I found, interestingly, was when I was doing my field work that most people I was talking to were all hip-hop dancers. And so I asked them, like, hip-hop, and how did you learn that? From television, just looking at television and copying. So, you know, that whole understanding of how to learn, how knowledge is transmitted through the generation had shifted. It was the most amazing discovery for me because, again, we have to sort of do a comparative thing because classical Indian dance, you have to study all your life. There is something called the Guru Shishya Parampara or Ustad Shagrid relationship, which comes from the Islamic tradition. One is a Hindu, one is the Islamic tradition, but there is a syncretic sort of version of this, where you actually learn from one teacher all your life. It's a very close relationship, and it's a very particular relationship. So that seemed to have really been challenged, and people are learning from workshops, from different, taking classes from different people, traveling all over the world, and this idea of hybridity or cosmopolitan identity became very important, and Bollywood was a big force in that. You know, and Bollywood industry, the way it was spreading its products. So this is, you have the birth of the item number. Now, what is an item number? Item number are these song and dance sequences in Bollywood. So I don't know if you've seen Bombay films, because they were called Bombay films prior to the 1990s, right? After 1990s, you have Bollywood. This, it also is a reflection of the liberalization and the structural change in India. So Bombay films, you know, if you look at Bombay films, of course, there have always been song and dance sequences. People just like to sing and dance in India, what can I say? Even our gods and goddesses dance all the time. So we always had, you know, and they're not like musicals. It's a very particular genre. So then these songs and dance sequences were now being called item numbers. And they had their own individual separate identity from the film. And they were highly influenced by MTV, as you can imagine. And they would circulate on their own. In music videos, music video became very important, and this is what I was learning throughout during my fieldwork, that these people who were dancing, not just the heroine, this is an important heroine, but people in the back, right? All these backup dancers, they used to be called extras at one time, then they were called backup dancers, now they're called junior artists, which also tells you how they are becoming important, you know, they are now artists. All these people, you know, dancing in the background and this particular kind of packaging that is associated with this song and dance sequences are called item numbers. And you have then with the item numbers, the item boys and the item girls. So this was now redefining what is femininity and what is masculinity in India. So you can look at this image, you can go through the images again to see how we are looking at the yogic body of the Bharatanatyam male dancer and what does it look like today. It's a very different construction of masculinity and femininity, both. So, like I said, that it's a very different construction. And also you can see the backup dancers. When I was doing my field work in Bombay Film City, this is where they do their shooting and stuff, I found many of them have traveled from America, from Eastern Europe, because it's better livelihood for these dancers. There's actually constant work in Bollywood, so they can make a living from dance. So it draws in international dance artists. And this is the idea of cosmopolitanism, hybridity that is represented through these item numbers that are danced by the item boys and item girls. This man, you see, he is iconic. His name is Shah Rukh Khan. Andrew knows. People are crazy about him, and mostly because he can dance. I mean, dancing is very important. If you can't dance, you can't be a hero in Hindi films. So this was my focus, really. I mean, this is the context, but what I was really interested in is to kind of go into the most local product, the most local representation of this mega industry of Bollywood and all of the stuff that was happening. So I thought that, okay, let me look at dance television reality show, because this is everywhere. Like, if you, you know, any channel will have their own various different versions, and it's also regionally produced. So this is a Bengali dance television reality show, you know, that was happening in Calcutta, Nach Dhoom Machale or Dance Dhoom Machale. And I followed a few people, what anthropologists do, follow a few people, and I build their life's histories. Sanjukta, this lady you see here, she has been trained in various dance forms because that's important now, otherwise you won't get work. And she has won quite a few contests. And as you know, dance reality shows are always, you know, the framework is contests. And so you have to win. It's very important to win. It's all question of winning or losing. And so she has an amazing career. Already, I mean, she is pretty frustrated. This other part of it, you know, in terms of how much these people have to struggle to survive. And that's the other thing which I can't really incorporate today, the kind of work these people do, the number of hours they devote to their dancing is just unthinkable, and the world that they belong to. It was also interesting for me, and which I'm going to go into a little bit more, is basically, this is the first time in India that you see a different group of people dancing, which is also was the most fascinating thing for me. Because in the past, dance usually belonged to the elite, Brahmin high caste people, when it got revived in modern India. Now, prior to that, I can go into that, but I will stop. Depending on the time, I will tell you what the dance history is about, you know, what really happened to the traditional dancers, you know, prior to independence, which was my first book, really, Bells of Change. But really, you find the elite dancers, you know, mostly dancing, especially among the women, educated elite, and the hereditary, what we call the hereditary male dancers. Now, these are the males who come from the traditional sort of dance lineages. They are called gurus. You know, all the females are also now called gurus, but usually the dance used to reside with these male teachers who belong to some kind of long lineage that traces itself back to ancient times. It was very important to establish your lineage, your identity, through those kinds of, you know, kinship traditions. Now, you found that, and you found these modern Indian high caste educated women dancing. For the first time since the 1990s, you see the working classes actually participating in this dance culture. So it's very much about democratization, some kind of deep-rooted democratization that is taking place, which was also fascinating for me. Because again, my earlier research looked at classical Indian dance like Kathak and its democratization among the lower middle classes in India. Because I love doing ethnography, and I was actually very fascinated with the fact that there was something happening prior to the 1990s or even into the 1990s, that how dance was sort of used as cultural literacy by the state government. Because Again, prior to the 1990s, it was very much state controlled by the academies, by the dance and music institutions. So I found that they were really pushing this, making lots of regional institutes to educate the people who might not have access to really expensive dance classes. And so I had argued that classical Indian dance is functioning like cultural capital, you know, in terms of democratization of these forms, that if you know classical forms, music and dance, then you have certain legitimacy as this ideal Indian citizen, that you are cultured, quote unquote, simply, that you have this cultural capital to actually go walk into a room and claim certain identity. Now that has completely, it's been turned on its head. It's almost like classical dances are, and music are suffering. They are now really threatened by these large industrial conglomerates like Bollywood and so forth. In fact, I have argued previously that the state is a hegemonic state, perpetuates a certain kind of classicism to claim certain kind of ideal identity. Now I take it back. I mean, it seems like my research was, because all of this happened so quickly. This is dramatic change since the liberalization of the 1990s. And the state academies, they retreated. They're no longer cool. It's no longer cool to be a classical dancer in India. If you're from the younger generation, you'd rather be doing contemporary hip hop, salsa, Bollywood. This is cool. So it has this, I mean, this is my sort of theoretical academic perspective talking, that it's sort of now, it seems like talking to people associated with some kind of a feudal past. I don't think people are consciously thinking like that, but it has a lot of baggage, let's say, that people don't like that baggage anymore. They want to be modern, cosmopolitan, hybrid, global, and classicism doesn't do that for them, the younger generation. So dance reality show, it's a really interesting lens through which you can see all of this contestations and dichotomy and of the classical and modern and all of that. So, this is one of the things that I saw. And then this is important because these are the celebrity judges from Bollywood, not very different from the, reality show formats here. But what is interesting is that these people are the new authority figures. So the gurus or the teachers of the past, who were sort of the authority figures of classical Indian dance forms are no longer considered authority figures. In fact, they are now struggling to sort of make themselves visible because they are old and hackneyed. And again, like I said, they are not cool. And these people are glamorous figures. They are all fantastic dancers. They can do any style you want them to do. So these are the cooler people. And the person in the center, his name is Hrithik Roshan. He's a fabulous dancer, really, truly, absolutely stunning dancer. He's a hip-hop dancer, again, self-trained. So this is something that I kept coming across. Like, where did you learn? I mean, this is the usual, like, who is your teacher? Where did you learn? He said, no, I never went to a school. I learned on my own. I looked at videos and, learned through looking at videos. I said, oh my God, and people can learn so much by just looking at videos. Apparently, yes. And the other two are Bollywood choreographers, Farah Khan and I forget her name, the other person. But these are from the industry. These people are from the industry, extremely important as far as choreography goes. And they are quote-unquote choreographers, which again, is a new term in India, in Indian dance. Choreography was not part of the dance vocabulary in the past. And I'm not going to go into why it isn't, but it was more closer to, if you look at classical dances, it's very close to music composition. The most of the innovations and all of that is in time rather than in space. So choreography has a different orientation, but now everybody wants to be a choreographer, not a dancer so much as a choreographer, because that has prestige. And these people are very much part of that discourse. They brought that idea, in. There are other forces there, like contemporary Indian dance. Again, I'm not going into that because contemporary Indian dance, quote unquote, comes out of classical tradition. And again, it's practiced by the elite. So it has its own sort of place, but it's very few people who are doing it. And it's internationally important in terms of artistic value, but what I'm looking at in terms of democratization of a form, I don't think that it really holds a candle to what's happening in the Bombay film genre. So these pictures are from my ethnography, you know, in Calcutta and in Mumbai. So this is a dance class, which I used to hang out a lot in these dance classes. The Star Jalsha is a particular television channel, and these people are preparing for their dance contest, right? And again, the way they are learning, I call it cut and paste embodiment. So this idea, because embodiment is one of the things, or the body becomes important, you know, one of the concepts that I look at. So this particular way of learning, or how knowledge is being transmitted now, is very interesting for me. And so this is what, and these classes go on for 9 to 10 hours. So this is how they're rehearsing. This is in Mumbai again. This young man, his name is Vikram Borade, and he does, again, Bollywood choreographer, MTV, music video, and they have incredible schedules. So one of the most frustrating thing for me was, while I was doing my ethnography, was to actually have a sort of timeline for anything, because things just kept changing. I could not have any kind of fieldwork strategy, like, you know, in terms of this is when I should meet this person. Nothing could be fixed. Nothing could be fixed. And their lifestyles are such that you can't expect them to give you a particular time. And so it was mostly about waiting patiently and just hanging out. And so it was quite a learning experience, especially from here, you know, having such tight schedules and things like that. Not having a schedule at all was quite something to get used to. So it's one of the, again, auditions for dance reality show, Dance India Dance. It's one of the most important national shows. And if you can make it or break it, you know, if you become a winner in this, you can make it. And this is really important because, like I said, these are many of them are coming from the working classes. They have no schooling. Many of them are, you know, can't afford college or school. And so if they appear on this reality show, it's almost like being counted, you know, sort of some kind of citizenry is going on here, some kind of, you know, way of being visible in India. It's a large country full of people. And also because, you know, this is their, they look at it as, okay, a pathway to elite networks. Once they make it, then they'll know all these important choreographers I told you about, and this is their ticket to middle class status. And we are just talking about middle class status. We are not talking about becoming rich or anything. They think they are going to become rich. I mean, some of them do. But even arriving at the middle class status, you know, buying the flat that they see advertised on the billboards or buying that nice car, this is a good enough sort of, you know, attraction for them. So these are the two choreographers, and one of them I followed, Bhaskar Rao, the one on your left. And he came from a really small town, a low caste and, you know, low socioeconomic sort of position, to becoming more or less established locally in Calcutta. And he does various different styles. The person next to him, Remo D'Souza, is an amazing story. He came from nowhere, like nobody knows. He even changed his name, some people say. And like from the footpath to becoming one of the most important choreographers in Bollywood. So he is one of those people, right? Never went to any school, learned everything on his own, fabulous dancer, full of style and attitude, like, wow, you know, Michael Jackson reborn kind of thing. Because Michael Jackson is very important in this narrative. You know, he's there, his specter is everywhere here. So he is amazing, and what is possible, you know, coming up in terms of his social position. So. And this is, I say hundreds, actually thousands of aspiring dance contestants waiting outside. This is what I found for the DID or Dance India Dance show. And they were waiting for entire, you know, day and night. They came from eastern part of India. and just to be auditioned for less than a minute. So this is the kind of aspirations that you see. So I'll stop here. I'll just quickly tell you about, you know, since it is part of how I'm theorizing all of this, is that there are three concepts that I want to quickly go over and then open it up for questions. That one of them is, I wanted to start with desire and subjectivity, right? And the connection between the two. So I kind of looked at the convergences and divergences of continental and Indian philosophy in terms of how desire has been talked about, discussed, and the convergences I found, interestingly, was gaze theory. People who know film theory, you know, gaze becomes very important in terms of, talking about media and subjectivity. And in the Indian context, we have darshan or nazar. Darshan comes from Hindu philosophy, the nazar comes from Islamic Urdu poetry. And the most important concept that I was deconstructing throughout this process is rasa theory, the Indian aesthetic theory of emotion. Like I said, that Indian dance, to understand Indian dance, music, poetry, everything, you have to sort of go back to these Sanskrit sort of theory of emotion, which becomes important. Although it's coming from ancient India, it becomes important because these things were revived during the during India's independence, that this is what became important in claiming classicism. So the way the classical dance and music were reconstructed went back to this rasa theory, although it belongs to, you know, ancient India. And so it's an Indian aesthetic theory of emotion, and it talks about desire. It starts with devotional desire kind of thing, desire for God. And this desire for God really is about your desire for love, because you reach God through love. I'm really simplifying. And that kind of desire, the most prominent sort of expression of this in dance is erotic love, or what we call Shringara Rasa. And this particular kind of love is also, or rasa, is also about distillation, or combining different moods or feelings and distilling or cooking them so that the essence comes out, and we call it taste. Right, tasting the emotion. So emotion is very physical. Emotion, that's why dance becomes important. It's very bodily. It's not something that is out there. And although we talk about spirituality, that spirituality is very embodied and it's very bodily. So desire becomes a very important framework through which you can see some of these things, because desire now, I'm arguing, has a different meaning, and it's the aspirational desire. Desire for aspiring fame, desiring for what is called the celebrity culture. I'm again simplifying, desiring for commodity, and people have talked about commodity aesthetics and what that means, you know, from the Marxian tradition. So this kind of voluptuous desire for things, desire for, you know, looking certain way, brand clothing, and all of that is very new in India. So I'm calling it aspirational desire. And that, of course, also, you know, rests with class mobility. All of this means that you can now enter, for the working classes, the middle class status. And somebody said that you no longer have to be in the waiting room of modernity. That everybody can be modern. This is what I was hearing, that we all have a chance of being modern in India today. And this is where the dance reality show and Bollywood is coming in. And so I'm talking about it in terms of remix. Rasa is no longer possible. It's a remix of different things. And remix is what you see in terms of hybridity, cosmopolitanism, embodiment, the cut and paste embodiment. So this is where it is right now. There's other stuff going on in Indian politics right now. There is a Hindu right-wing government. So when the 1990s liberalization started, the vision was different. You know, westernization and cosmopolitanism was okay. Now it seems like there is going to be a lot of contestation regarding that. The questions of cultural pollution and all of that is there right now. So I'm not going to go into that. I'll just stop here, because it's always so much turbulence in that part of the world. So that's basically what my work is about. And hopefully I can finish it and submit in a few months. Thank you.